If a house is on railroad tracks, that's going to be, if a house is on a busy street, it's going to be a house that has a funky layout. Maybe it has a very steep driveway. Those things are going to keep your house from renting quickly, right? So if you hire a property manager, it's not their fault if it's a bad house. It's not their fault if it takes them 60 days to rent your property because it's on a horribly busy street. So these are the things that, you know, if you're just buying based on a spreadsheet, you are not seeing the entire picture. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am your host, Spencer Sutton, and today I'm flying solo, and I've got some good stuff, I think, to share with you. But before I get going, what I'd like to do is I would like to start off by telling you a story. As we've mentioned before, we talk to a lot of investors. We get to know them. We understand what they're trying to do. A lot of them call us looking for property. So they're looking for real estate, and we can definitely help with that, especially now that we have brokerage services in a lot of our markets. But then also a lot of them call us with deals they've already done and they need help. Some of these come, they have just purchased properties, and some of them come transferring management from a different property manager to us. And so that happens from time to time. So I want to tell you about the story, this person who called. And she was adamant that she was going to transfer her six or seven properties. I can't really remember exactly how many there were, six or seven properties to us. And that was great. Would love to bring those on board. And I started asking her some questions about her previous experience at her other property manager. And she was getting into it and talking about some of the issues she's had. And, you know, I completely understood, listened to her. And she was really upset because the property manager was not going to rent some of her properties in their condition. And she had bought them in rent-ready condition. So she was wanting to move them to us. Well, when I heard that, I was a little bit cautious and hesitant, but we brought them on board. And then I went out, had our team go out there and take a look at these properties, give an assessment. Before we can put them on the market, we want to make sure that they're rent ready and do our own checks. So we came back to her with a laundry list of things that needed to be done just to get the properties in a place where they were safe and habitable, like where we would feel comfortable placing residents or having people go through and fill out applications for this property. And it was just not a very pretty sight. And she had bought these sight unseen from out of state, and she had thought she had done her homework and knew exactly what was going on with them. So when we brought her our repair estimate, you know, she was pretty upset about it. Seemed to be very similar issues that she had with her other property manager, but we went through it all and talked a lot about it. And we held firm on, hey, this is what needs to happen before these places can get rented. So time went on. I can't remember if she had, if she transferred to another property manager or what the case was, but the point of the story is that one day somebody had sent me a GoFundMe page, and it was this investor who set up a GoFundMe page to raise money for the repairs. And the reasoning behind the GoFundMe page was so that she could provide good housing for tenants and that they could live in her houses. So that was the premise behind the GoFundMe. Essentially, it was, please pay for my repairs so I can put tenants in these rental houses and they can pay me rent. Like I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it just, like, that story reminded me, like, I was thinking about that today, and it just reminded me that, you know, that's an extreme case, but every single day there are investors who fail in the rental property game, who don't make it, who make too many costly mistakes, and it can either send them into bankruptcy, it could send their properties into foreclosure, or it could just wound them very, very badly where they never want to buy rental properties again. And even when they went in it with like great hopes and great aspirations. So today, what I want to do is I want to talk about the five reasons I believe or that I've seen, the reasons why rental investors fail. And hopefully this will be some good information for you so that you can kind of make sure that you are doing things a little bit differently than these five things. So let's get right into it. The first thing, I believe, where rental investors, how they fail is they don't set goals and they're not specific with a buy box. So that's it. They don't set goals and they're not specific with a buy box. So what do you, before you even begin learning and going to the extreme effort to educate yourself and start looking at deals and analyzing deals, you really first need to understand, what is it that you want? Like, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? This starts with the very first step of this is being brutally honest about where you are, right? So if I set this massive target, like I want to be free of, you know, I want to quit my job in 2 years, in 24 months, and I want to own 20 rental properties. Well, that's great. But the first thing I have to do is I have to be brutally honest about where I currently am. Like, is that possible? Is there a way, is there a path to do that? Or am I fooling myself? And so I know for me, when I started buying rental property back in 2005, I didn't set goals. I didn't have any goals. I didn't have buy boxes. And man, I'm telling you, the first 10 rental properties I bought, huge mistakes, because I didn't sit down and say, hey, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. This is how I'm going to do it. And oh, by the way, these are the types of properties that I want to buy. And all of that is really going to align with your risk tolerance. So when you sit down and start setting goals in your buy box, you really need to be thinking about, how much risk am I willing to take? If you are buying in a low to moderate income of Birmingham, Alabama, or Atlanta, Georgia, and you are risk adverse, in other words, you don't like a lot of risk, well, then you're probably not buying in the correct areas, right? If you're buying in low to moderate income areas, then you're okay with risk, but you need to understand what you can take. What is your risk tolerance? Then you need to build the buy box. Like, what type of house do I want in these areas? And then assess whether that's even possible. Like, we have areas of town where you're not going to find 4-bedroom, 2-bath house. You're really going to find 3-bedroom, 1-bath houses. Those are going to be the older areas. So setting goals and setting a buy box, when people don't do this, they just start going out and saying, hey, I want to look at, hey, I think this is a good rental portfolio. I have a lot of people, I talk to a lot of people who want to buy bulk properties, as many as they can, as fast as they can, to, you know, achieve a goal. But when you do that, what you're doing is you're neglecting your buy box typically, because somebody who's selling a lot of properties in a portfolio is, you know, typically there's going to be several properties within there that are going to fall outside of your buy box, and you're taking unnecessary risk. You're not following your plan. And ultimately, it's going to take you away from achieving the goals that you're setting. So the first way that we see people, rental investors, fail is not setting goals and not setting a buy box. The second thing we see are people or investors who think they know everything, right? Now, you're sitting here listening to this podcast, so I'm going to assume that you are intent on educating yourself, which is great. But a lot of times people, maybe they listen to one opinion, and then they go out and try to build this massive rental portfolio, or they don't listen to anything at all. Like, I would challenge you, like, the questions I would want to know from you, who are you learning from? Like, who are you? Do you have any mentors? Are you investing in yourself? Are you investing in education? What podcast are you listening to? What books are you reading? What blogs? What YouTube videos are you watching? I mean, there's so much great information out there. Like, you need to understand what you're doing before you commit to this. Because as we said in a previous podcast, this is a business. Like, you would never just go out and start a business without planning for it and educating yourself on that business. The same is true for real estate. So don't think you know everything. Who are you learning from? Like, I would say, if you're an out-of-state investor, then absolutely, you know, there's a lot of great ways you can learn. If you're an out-of-state investor, you need to book a flight and come in town and sit down, interview people, talk to people, take people to lunch, take people to dinner, and listen to what they're saying. Like, listen to them. You know, we have people that come in town and sometimes they listen to us and sometimes they hear and then they want to go and do something else. Like, well, I'm not going to take that advice. I'm going to go do something, you know, something totally different. I would say that's probably not a good idea. But if you are in town, then man, you have an advantage. You have a great advantage in that you can take people to lunch. You can take people to dinner. You can spend, you know, months and months getting to know what strategies are working, what's not working, what do you need to know about the area of town that you're looking to invest in. And then what I would do also is when you start getting deals, when you start sourcing deals yourself, I would start sharing some of those with the people you've gotten close with and say, hey, this is a deal that I'm considering. Would you give me your opinion on it? I think what you'll find is within the investment community, if you've built a relationship, I think what you'll find is people who are willing to speak with you, to share with you, and to give you their honest feedback. You know, ultimately, there's nobody that I know in the real estate business that I want to see fail. I want to see everybody win, and there's enough deals to go around. So I would start sharing deals with other people and getting their opinions with other mentors. And then something else I would do is just being, you know, as we talked about, being brutally honest with where you are when you're talking about setting goals, I would also be brutally honest with your strengths and weaknesses. Like, what are you good at and what are you not good at? This is something a former partner and I did very, very well back when we were buying and selling houses. We were wholesaling houses. He was a great buyer of houses. He had the personality that would go out and properly assess these houses and could absolutely build rapport with the owners, but he would shoot them straight and he would tell them what we could pay for them. That was what he was great at. What I was great at was selling those properties to other investors. So I built relationships with investors. So we each had our, hey, this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm not good at. And then as we grew our business, we started hiring people that would do that for us. Like we hired buyers and things like that, that we could outsource. But for you, what are you good at? And what are you not good at? Be honest about that, and then get help in areas that you're not really proficient in or really good at. So that's number two. Is one of the reasons why people rental investors fail is they think they know everything. All right. The third one that I think is important, I believe what I have seen time and time and time again with real rental investors who fail is they buy houses based off of a spreadsheet. I mean, listen, everything looks better on a spreadsheet and you can torture the numbers enough to get them to say what you want them to say. You know, people get enamored with spreadsheets. I believe they are useful, but they're projections. They're not reality. They're projections. And so my advice is if you want to avoid this mistake, then spreadsheets are good, but be very realistic about them because there are things that you are not, that you can't see in these numbers, right? So what are some of those things? Well, you need to understand a lot of things. Like I would want to understand the length of tenancy for each of the tenants. Like if I was buying properties that were already occupied, I'd want to know the length of tenancy. Like how long have they already been in there? So maybe I could think about how soon they may move out. I would want to know the types of repairs that have been done there. So think about this. If you're not buying a house that is completely in newly rehabbed, but you're buying a house that's already got a tenant in it, which is an attractive thing, right? Because you have cash flow or you have money coming in. What you're not thinking about probably is the repairs that haven't been done in that property that will need to be done when the tenant moves out. So think about their lease agreement, take into consideration their security deposit, make sure that the person you're buying it from has the security deposit. Again, any kind of repairs that have been done and repairs that will need to be done. And then I would also, I think this is something that a spreadsheet will never tell you, and that's just the white elephant issues with the property. So white elephant issues are anything that are going to detract from the house that you can't do anything about. That's going to be if a house is on railroad tracks. That's going to be if a house is on a busy street. It's going to be a house that has a funky layout. Maybe it has a very steep driveway. Those things are going to keep your house from renting quickly, right? So if you hire a property manager, it's not their fault if it's a bad house. It's not their fault if it takes them 60 days to rent your property because it's on a horribly busy street. So these are the things that, you know, if you're just buying based on a spreadsheet, you are not seeing the entire picture, right? And the unexpected will happen. People will move out sooner than you think. Something that happened to me, you know, a couple of years ago that was unexpected in one of my rental houses was sewer line had to be replaced. So that was, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 that I wasn't expecting that had to be done emergency for the tenants to have water. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen that you're going to need to take care of. They're just unexpected. So don't, I mean, again, spreadsheets are good. Don't become completely reliant on spreadsheets. The next way that we see rental investors fail is just their inability to have difficult conversations. And to me, this goes back to understanding what you're good at and what you're not good at. Back in the early days, when I first got into rental investing, I was not good at having difficult conversations. I wanted to be the tenant's friend, and that is such a rookie mistake. Now, it's good to be friendly with people. Obviously, we know that. But I wanted to be friends. I thought, man, if they liked me, then they're going to pay on time. And that was 100% the wrong thought process. So if you have difficulty having hard conversations, then what you're going to need is you're going to need to build a team around you who can do that. And that means that, you know, it's good because you're not going to be working in the business more than likely. It'll give you time to work on the business, right? It'll give you time to go out and find more deals, and then you can leave some of the other work to other people. So what are those difficult conversations? Well, you're going to have difficult conversations with tenants, as we know. You're going to have difficult conversations with contractors. You're going to have difficult conversations with partners. If you have partners in this business, you're going to have difficult conversations with them. You may even have difficult conversations with spouses if you're married and they want to be involved in this business. I mean, trust me, I've had my fair share of difficult conversations with my wife about this business, especially in 2007, 2008. Not fun. But again, the key is to face the brutal facts and say, can I do that? Can I have those difficult conversations? If you can't, find somebody, put them on your team who can do that. So you may need a property manager who, trust me, we are experts at having very, very difficult conversations. You need to have, when you go into a business deal with a partner, you need to set clear expectations and be very upfront about the need to lay everything out on the table and not hold back and be okay with that. That's one of the big ones. Just if you're unable to have difficult conversations, we see a lot of rental investors, man, they mess up big time with this one. And then I would say the last one that I want to talk about is just lack of patience. Like, slow is better in this business. Slow is better. I know everybody wants to get up to 100 properties, or they want to get up to a place where they're at 100,000 in passive income. I get it. I know that that's the way it works. Patience, though. We had a guest on the podcast. I would encourage you to go back and listen to the episode if you hadn't. I believe his name was Michael Zuber. He's out of California, and he invests in, I want to say Sacramento, but this guy literally just, he kept his day job and he just went property after property after property after property, slow and steady. He got to know the market. He got to know the area. He got to know everything he needed to. He studied the numbers, but he was also realistic about what was going on with the property, the house, the area, his buy box, setting his goals, until eventually he and his wife replaced both of their six-figure incomes with their rental income. And that's when he left his job and never went back. And so I believe that patience is definitely needed in this business. A lot of us, especially people who are self-motivated and who want to be done maybe with their day job, then those types of people who are go-getters tend to take probably more risks than they need to and tend to go at things a little bit too fast. And if they would just take their time, they'd probably get there sooner, because one big mistake in this business can set you back years. And it may even drive you out of the business. Like I mentioned before, we've seen people who have filed bankruptcy. We've known people personally who have filed bankruptcy, whose houses have gone to foreclosure. Like, these are good people. And then, you know what? A lot of times they don't ever want to deal with rental real estate ever again. They never want to get back in the game, and that's understandable. So I would say go slow and steady. It may, hurt you initially to buy one property in a year in 12 months, or maybe two properties in 12 months, but it's definitely the best way to handle that, because we see people get into a lot of trouble when they're not patient. So that's it. Those are the five reasons we see rental investors fail. I hope that has been helpful to you. And as always, if you need any help or we can answer any questions for you, don't hesitate to reach out to us at Evernest. We'd love to help you. And we will see you on the next episode. But if you would leave us a review, subscribe, share it with your friends, we greatly appreciate it. And we'll see you next week on a new episode.